How can AI unlock new path to growth for multinationals in China? Is it true that Chinese retailers produce 1,000 social media videos in the time it takes global brands to create just one? Why are 95% of corporate AI projects failing? And could shadow AI be the secret weapon of the 5% that succeed? Why does the experts think investing in AI doesn't have to be expensive? And most provoking of all, why does one of my guests call AI the digital equivalent to a nuclear weapon? This is China Biz, the podcast about opportunities and challenges for MNCs in China. In this episode, we are deep diving into the high-stakes world of AI in China, where innovation, risk, and opportunity collide like nowhere else on earth. I'm your host, Jacob Johansen. I lived in China for 25 years. I work as an author, keynote speaker, and a strategy consultant with a leading global consultancy in Shanghai. China Biz, however, is my own independent project, and the opinions shared here does not represent those of my employer. With that disclaimer out of the way, let's dive in. Etienne Chalier and Ling Fan, welcome to China Biz. Today, it's going to be about AI in China. That's a hot topic. But before we dive into the conversation, let me just ask you to introduce yourself. And Etienne, if you're okay, you go first.
Sure. It's a long story, but I can summarize it. I'm from Belgium. I came to China in 1995 for a tech company in telecom. I did some work there. Then I moved into other activities, which was more services and consulting, helping Western companies to do business in China in different types of approaches. And then finally, about 10 years ago, I rediscovered the field of AI, which I had discovered many years ago as a student. And I dived in it with the perspective of how can we use it practically, and what do we need to do as business executives or people in an organization to use those tools? And since then, it's been a rush and a marathon at a sprint speed to follow up, but very exciting. And that's what I'm doing right now as a consultant and coach for organization, and also as an educator lecturing in two universities in Shanghai. Mm-hmm.
Ling, over to you.
Well, thank you, Jacob, for the invitation. My name is Ling Fan. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a founder and CEO of a company called Tzine. Tzine is a compound word of tech and design. Basically, what we do is to bring technology into creativity. I started this company about 10 years ago and in Shanghai before I spent a few years teaching at University of California, Berkeley, Human Computer Interaction. Mm. From the very starting point, we start using early AI technology at that time, maybe called neural network or GAN, generative adversarial network, to generate basic graphics for business users. We have clients, including Fortune 500 companies and also a lot of smaller businesses. About three years ago, we became so-called unicorn, which means that the valuation of the company reached $1 billion. We have investors like Sequoia Capital, Temasek, SoftBank, among others. And in the past year, I've been embracing, relearn myself about the new AI technologies, the generative AI. So I'm building a new product under Tzine, which is called Atypica, ATYPICA.AI. It's using AI to simulate consumer behaviors so that business can actually talk to those AI agents to better understand how the consumer might think to go deeper inside. You know, before, a lot of market research is rather quantitative, and we want to bring back the qualitative aspect, like the conversation we have today, and understand better the reason why, you know.
That's very, very interesting. That's almost another topic or another podcast another day. I'm ex-advertising and still very, very interested in consumer behavior and the drivers that dictate user behavior, as I call it.
Sure.
So this could be a super, we'll do that conversation in another episode.
Yes, but, of course. But of
very
course,
interesting.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. Guys, welcome on board. Let's kick off by asking both of you to try to draw a picture for us. What is the real state of the AI development in China today, and what's actually being implemented across different industries?
Maybe I can have a quick overview. It's interesting because we have two different perspectives. Like Lingfang is really having an application that's used and developing it and related to content. I'm more like a B2B guy who's been doing industrial stuff and so on. So it's actually quite interesting to see the comparison of our feeling about this. First thing that we can say about the development of AI in China is that China, like the US, is developing the whole stack. So basically, if you compare to Europe, where we're using what other people are developing in our applications, China is doing the same, but also has developed the different levels of the technology stack, as well as a different way of handling data. So it's basically a full player. So that's an important element to remember. And if you look at AI, I like to split it in two types. One, which is organizations and people developing the tools of AI that other people can use, like OpenAI and ChatGPT or DeepSeek and their model. And then you have the people who develop AI-enabled applications to solve a specific problem. And that would be typically what happens in large organizations, or if, as an individual, we develop our own small agents for our own purpose. And while in China, both can be done because the full stack is available and it is happening. You see companies like Ali, like DeepSeek and other organizations like design developing tools that others can use. And then you have in organization, in the government, in banks, you have people using those tools. And that's, I think, compared to what's going on in Europe, that's quite a big difference. So I would say the China environment is quite developed. Then we can look at different industries, but I leave the word to Ling. Sorry.
Sure, no problem. Yeah, I just add maybe two more dimensions. One is that in terms of AI, of course, is a technology, and the fundamental technology is pretty critical for the application level development. If you look at the very fundamental models approach that a Chinese company took, is actually open sourced. So DeepSeek and Q1, which is the open source model by Alibaba, actually perform much better in terms of the open source model than American and European counterparts. Of course, the proprietary model, GPT or Claude, still function the best, but they are proprietary, which means that if a business, if someone wants to use it, it needs to connect with the server, right? Cloud. But the open source model, you actually can implement the model in your own server, which means that your data will be protected and then the use case will be protected. So I think these are very different approaches. And obviously, the Chinese company embraces the open source way. So I remember
What's the motivation from a commercial point of view? What's the motivation to choose the open source approach?
Yeah. I think that because the model itself, in terms of performance, the proprietary ones definitely are much better. But a lot of cases, especially the business cases or the government cases, you need data security. You don't want to feed the data. You don't want to feed the scenario to a model that you cannot control. Therefore, you have to use open source model. And since China is relatively half a year slower than the American models, so the only way to win part of the battle is to find its own territory. I remember once Eric Schmidt, the old CEO of Google, once said, it's not a battle between OpenAI, Alibaba, DeepSeek. It's the battle between open source and proprietary. So I think that's one dimension. Whether you see a lot of a client we work with, when they are really implementing AI for their whole company, not just the marketing, not just the sales, but also product R&D, supply chain, they actually want their own models, which based on the open source model. And the second aspect I want to add is about talent. You see, all these technology, they are created by talents. More than half of the AI talents are actually Chinese. We always joke, well, it's a competition between Chinese in China and Chinese in other countries. So I think in China, because the education system, I'm sure that you guys are so familiar with, people are very good at engineering, mathematics, and also a lot of universities, including the university I'm part of in Tongji, all open all of a sudden within the few 2 or 3 years, all of a sudden every discipline right now has the AI plus. So the AI plus marketing, AI plus design, AI plus mechanical engineering, so all AI plus. So I think that will sort of start to produce the next generation engineers that's so savvy with AI. And that, you know, talent war is always takes time and very well. It's more fun, even more fundamental than the model itself, I would say.
Let me ask a controversial question. Who's ahead, U.S. or China on AI? What's the status of the battle, the competition?
You know, that's a question that a lot of people would like to have and focus the narrative on. I would say, who cares? There is a narrative in the general public, in the media, saying, who is on path to get AGI? Who has the best LLMs? Who has the best model, the best agent, and so on? And that's what occupies the whole space for people who are not in the field. But if you look at how to use those tools today, that doesn't matter. You have so many good models today that to get an application, you need a few things. You need some data, some knowledge, basically. Let's call it knowledge. You need to understand how you do things. What's the sequence of tasks of the workflow you have? And then we use a LLM to be able to understand the things, to handle the semantic, to do the conversational aspects. But this is not the core of what's going on. What's going on is the task and the problem we want to solve, and then we happen to use these LLMs to do part of that work. But that's only part of the work. So I would say, if you are focused on doing something with those tools, who cares who is first? What matters is which one can you use to have your own solution and make it happen. And then let other people spend their money investing in a company that will use, I don't know how many zillions to do something. So that's a controversial answer to your controversial question.
Yeah, but that's great. But Ling, you said that, did you say 6 months, that China is 6 months behind US on development of AI tools? Or try to elaborate.
Well, I think, but if you asked me this question a year or two ago, before DeepSeek, I would say that the models competition was probably 6 months apart. But I think since DeepSeek, the approaches are quite different. The open source model, using, you can install in your own computer, China is leading. And the proprietary model, GPT and Claude, and Gemini are still the best. So I think these are very different approaches right now.
But when will that change? Because in all other industries where US or Europe has been ahead, you see a shift. I don't say it necessarily happens here, but you said yourself that all the engineers are Chinese. 47 out of the world's top 100 engineering universities are Chinese. China has critical mass when it comes to talent. So will China catch up? And if so, when?
Jacob, it's a very difficult question. It's a very sensitive question as well. I would say that AI is not just a benign technology. It's equivalent to a nuclear weapon, I would say. So whenever this two superpower remains, there would be a battle between the two. And wherever that wins, have a power shift. Therefore, AI will shift. Otherwise, you know, in terms of technology, I don't think it's not a technological question. But I would say in China, there are quite a lot of use cases for sure. And they're easier to use, quicker to use, and generate a lot of data. That would be the benefit. That would be the advantage in China. Nevertheless, we develop AI education, AI infrastructure, and AI technology relatively late. So we probably only have 5-10 years to develop all this. So ecosystem takes time. And the US definitely has the best ecosystem, hardware, software, and application, and things like that. A capital market and the appreciation of technology, the willingness to pay to the new technology. I think that kind of ecosystem, China still have a long way to catch up.
All right. Interesting. You mentioned China has a lot of interesting use cases, a good use cases. Let's try to look at that for a second and say, I'm interested, which sectors or industries in China are the furthest ahead in using AI at scale? And if you both of you look at interesting cases that can be inspirational for multinational companies and leaders, also Chinese leaders of multinational companies here in China, what cases would you recommend them to dive into?
Okay, in terms of the sectors, I would say a sector that started quite early is supply chain and then online retail. And this started before AI was popular. They started with predictive AI and all these recommendation systems, and then the same organizations, similarly like what Amazon did in the US, they also deployed automated warehouse system, and these systems required predictive systems, but also vision recognition systems, and they really developed. And you have actually an industry that developed also in between 2018 all the way to now. So that it's not generative AI, but it's still using data, using models, and these kind of things. And then at the generative AI, I would say, I think Lingfang has more data on that, but I think a lot of assistants are being deployed by the online retailers, by a lot of organizations in finance, or everywhere where you have interaction. In medicine, in the health sector, there are not enough doctors, specialized doctors, to support the requirements. So you have this use case where one person can help or can use diagnosis tools to go faster or to handle more cases. So you have these type of situations. Now, quantitatively, I don't have data on that, but I see those trends and those drivers that push people to do that. And we know that in China, people are more adoptive of technology, so less afraid of the risks, and therefore things can deploy faster. I even heard that in EU now you have this like a garage type or bedroom type of businesses where people do generative AI to help the small low-cost product sellers to translate their things in different languages and create images. Okay, that's EU, right? So even there, a lot of grassroots kind of organization doing this, because one person with one PC can do that in their bedroom. So good, then they do it. So I think there's a lot of dynamics happening, probably more widespread than what's going on in the West.
We receive quite a lot of global visits. For those global visits, one thing that almost surprised every global guest are the quantity, the amount of the social media posts that one company or one brand needs to produce every day. In China, it's very difficult to sell a car. There are too many EV car companies, right? I remember we once worked with one of the best EV car company. And then they have about 500 resellers. And then every resellers would have a TikTok account and a Renault account. And every day, they need to produce at least three short videos. So that's a huge amount, right? And then what AI help here is that basically AI help each retailer, based on their characteristics, their personality, to draft the script. And then each video is a combination of a person that's speaking and a lot of introduction of different features of the car. And so AI will actually separate what needs to be spoke and what will be extrapolated from the content that's provided by the brands and then stitched to a video. And because it's none of the clips are AI generated, so it's not a, you don't need to label it's AI generated, but actually the whole process is AI driven. And at the end, guess how much for each video needs to be produced?
And no clues, you're telling me.
Yeah, I always say all these videos, the cost needs to be reduced to a cup of coffee. And then people might ask me what kind of coffee. It could be range from an instant coffee, like half a dollar, to a Starbucks coffee, like $5, right? Yeah. It depends on the complexity, but it's very cheap. And every shop, every owner will produce different videos, but talking about, you know, similar selling points. So I think those things surprises a lot of global audience, because in other countries, they're still struggling, you know, spending a few hundred dollars to produce one of these kind of KOL videos, influencer videos, right? But in China, we're already able to do that.
How long time does it take to make one of these videos?
You should ask how long time to take to make 1,000 videos like this. It takes about half an hour.
Wow.
At the same time. So imagine this is like an AI factory of contents. And then you pick a script. And then AI will help to modify to 1,000 different videos. And then half an hour, you will get 1,000 videos in a magic folder automatically filled in.
And this is a tool that is located with the company, right? So it's not a third party agent. You do it at home, so to speak. It's homework, because that's another thing with content. You talk about social media content. A lot of MNCs operating in China rely on third party agencies or vendors to produce written content and images and video, and there's a whole industry who do this for a living. But what you're saying now is that a lot of Chinese companies are now already producing this in-house, and they're doing this by producing 1,000 videos, special videos in half an hour.
Yeah.
That's a disruption of the content industry, wouldn't you say?
On one hand, it's a disruption, but the reason why all these are needed, because we need a quantity of content. The reason why we need a quantity of content, because of the platform like TikTok and RedNote came out, right? And these platforms are algorithm-driven platforms. So you need a quantity of the content in order to be able to view by audience. I don't think it's just a disruption of traditional content production. It's actually a disruption of how a company are viewing or doing growth because of TikTok and RedNote, this kind of platforms. And of course, the traditional agency model would be challenged by the AI agent, another kind of agency.
Where is e-commerce and retail right now? What's the level of implementation? Etienne, you just mentioned, you know, these auto-generated recommendations, the first generation of very primitive AI, so to speak. Where are we now in e-commerce and retail in terms of implementation of AI?
So I would say you have two aspects. The one I would just mention, which is the outgoing to get attention from potential customers and bring them in. If you look at the process of buying, so first you see a video, then you will, if you buy a car, you're not going to just click on it and buy it. You will ask some questions. So you have a journey for the customer. And at that moment, there will be also use of assistance or something that can handle people until they are identified as, okay, that's really a customer. Then you can put a human in front of it. So in this area, there's a lot of work done. What I find quite interesting is that the companies are doing retail are developing models, foundation models like Quen with Ali, which is and really promoting it and making it open. So that means they've developed that inside. That means they use something, they have the capability, so they have those tools. Whether we know what they have or not, they're having quite strong capabilities. Then you have the operational insight. Once you have an order, you need to implement it. You need to deliver things. And we all know that you have to allocate the goods in different warehouses, or that's your boring B2B logistic things, which is really hard to make happen, especially when you have this competition and consumer now expect I order something, a part of chips, and I have it 5 minutes later at my door. So of course there they also use these tools. And they use these tools, the traditional predictive AI, clearly an optimization, but in some case they also can use the Gen AI to feed those models, so that they don't need the human to bring the data. So the generative AI, it quote unquote understands, so it can handle concepts and then making them more objective. So that's being handled there, and those technologies are implemented there. And I think it takes a while to go to the industry, but I think in terms of more traditional usage, it is being used also gradually in the industry, manufacturing industry. But mainly, we see everything related to retail, from the front end to get customers, all the way to the supply chain, which is to push the goods to the customer. That's clearly a strong area. Government is using it to a certain extent already for many years, first with surveillance and video surveillance and gradually other use. Okay, we don't know exactly what's going on, but we know it's a strong push. That means companies are developing technologies for that and can be used for others. And then at the automotive side, there's quite a bit of work done at the autonomous vehicle. Not clear when that will come, but that's a lot of work being done and a strong focus on that. And one thing that is strong, I don't know when it will break out, is the robotic, the hardware and AI together. And the robotic is one element. It's so obvious. The autonomous car is also one. And I'm pretty sure we're going to see a lot of those smart devices coming up that have some AI already. They already have it. We don't know, but they will add more. And I think that's one of the area, and maybe one of the reasons why companies are doing the models open source, because China is strong in the hardware. And to compete with or prevent the hegemony of OpenAI and Google, well, the best way is to cut their market by cutting the model, giving the model free, and we continue to work on how we use those models in something people can buy and use. So I think that's
an interesting perspective. Yeah, makes sense.
And that would fit with a lot of the thing we've seen in the past out of China, where a lot of focus on the goods you sell, on hardware or the service, but not just selling a license for a software. That's you don't sell that to, you get it as part of something else. And I think that angle is maybe one of the reasons why we see those open source package coming out. And that's great for everyone.
If we try to generalize a little bit, I will ask you now a little bit maybe populistic question. Bear with me, you are experts, but try to simplify it a little bit here. If we look at the Chinese industry in general, so we look at business, not government, 1 to 5, how far is Chinese companies inside China on implementing AI as a daily tool? 1 being very little, very, very far away from doing this, 5 being, you know, embracing AI across the majority of Chinese companies. Where are we? What is the level of implementation and also the willingness to the interest in this among Chinese leaders and Chinese businesses?
Difficult question.
Tough question.
Well, I used to do a survey in my WeChat. I asked similar questions to two groups of people. One group is professors. I said, you know, are you using AI? Do you want your students to use AI? And they would say, fine, right? They use AI every day, but they want their students not to use AI. And if you ask the business owners the same question, they will say they want everyone to use AI. So the business owner's mindset is 5, but themselves, they never use. They just talk about, they ask their employees to use. And if you ask the employees, do you use AI? Well, I know about GPT. I know about Doubao. But maybe the application, the actual application of AI is 1. So I think there's a gap between the willingness to use and then the actual use.
they feel like they're doing a lot, but compared to what they could do, they're probably at a one or two.
And, yes.
And then if you look at tactically, like opportunistically, maybe two, and how to use it to really transform the way you do things, probably a one. But that's not only China, it's everywhere. Huh?
It's everywhere. It's everywhere, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Well, what about the leading Chinese companies, the companies we all talk about, the Xiaomi and NIO and Alibaba and Tencent and what have you, where I would assume they are a different place on that scale.
I would say, at least from what I know, right? It depends on what kind of job inside the company they do. If you are asking the engineers, the programmers, probably they are going already five. But if you're asking, let's say, a human team, end team, marketing team, sales team even, probably one. Even we, let's say if inside a ByteDance, they have Doubao, right? One of the best AI application. And I don't think everyone inside of ByteDance are using their own model. So I guess it also depends a lot with the job that they do.
And then you can use it as a standard tool. And I would say like as the home development, you need to do a lot of things manually because the tool is a general tool, which is not fit for each purpose. It's just for all purposes. That means it's not fit for any of the purposes really. So unless a company has developed something that uses that tool, but put something around it so that you can use it more efficiently with some kind of agentic, layer around it, then you need to do quite a bit of effort to get the results that you really want. You can get some like 70% thing by asking the question, but that's not what you want. You want to do professional work. Then to do that, it requires quite a bit of involvement from yourself, unless that has been captured by some kind of application that has been developed. But that needs to be done by the company or by a team. And that thing, it is only starting actually now. You can see organizations starting to think of that. And that's a minority. It's a lot of willingness. In China, the pure Chinese organizations have been enabled to think of that after DeepSeek, because before they had to rely on US developed things and it's sometimes sensitive. Mm. Sometimes they're not even allowed formally to use those by those organizations. Now they are kind of enabled, so they do a lot of things, but we're still at the beginning of it. And the transformational aspect, the skills on how to use those tools, so not the technical skills to build the tools, but how to use those tools, what is required to make it fit for our purpose, that's still need to be developed. And that's really a priority for many organizations.
So what you're both saying, actually, if I hear you correctly, is that from an adaptation point of view or implementation point of view, we're still looking at the top of the iceberg. Because everybody talk about AI being everywhere, but what you're actually saying is that we're just getting started.
I like to take the analogy. Like I have, white hairs, or I've seen the beginning of internet. I remember a time where we had no internet. And I was actually in the US, MIT, when the internet really picked up, and I saw there. So the technology was there, the HTTP, all these basic technologies, Apache server, all the thing needed were there in 92, 93. The first browser were there also. So a lot of the things that were needed were there. And even Amazon was there, and Yahoo, not Google, I'm not sure. A lot of things were there. But who could say in 95 what they would do with internet? And when you look down like 30 years earlier, what happened there? And so I think we are in 1998 from AI, if you compare to internet. So the potential, we don't even know what it will be. We know it's going to be big. Especially the internet, it basically gives you access. It reduces distances between people, between machines and people and machine. Physical distance. AI, especially Gen AI, it reduces the distance between us or a machine and information. And that's a totally different level. And it's hard to comprehend, but you get basically, you do a search, you look for information, you ask it in your common language, and the system will do whatever is needed to get the right information for wherever that is, if it's well-structured, and bring it to you in your own language. This is like, it's like language. It's a new language. You can talk with a machine. The machine talks back to you in your language. This is amazing. So we are far, and that's, I'm talking about just the text, but we have the same thing with images, with sound, and God knows with what that we have not imagined yet. So I think the implication and the transformative capabilities of these technologies are, we cannot imagine it yet. So that's why we are only at one or two. Even though people spend time with it, but they don't use it yet. They spend time with it.
This is interesting because a lot of the guests I have in previous episode of the podcast, leaders of multinational companies talk about how China used to be behind, caught up, and now in many sectors, Chinese producers, you know, we talked about automotive, that's very obvious, but there, I would also say other industries, maybe even pharmaceuticals, consumer goods, retail, that you find Chinese competitors to MNCs who are actually ahead now. And that leave a lot of, this is no secret, this is not controversial in my opinion, leaves a lot of MNC CEOs being foreigners or Chinese with a headache. Because how do you compete in the Chinese market if you're actually behind on quality and price and time to market? But if I hear you correctly, both of you, Ling and Etienne, if I hear you correctly, you're saying actually on the implementation and embracing AI, it's not like the Chinese company are already a quantum leap ahead of multinational companies. There's still an opportunity for MNCs operating in China to get on the wagon, participate in this, implement it. They're not already lost behind this train. Do you recognize, is that correct, Ling?
I think these are two aspects. One is that there are quite a lot of Chinese companies are being more and more competitive globally, right? That's for sure. But it's not just because of AI. It's because of all the reasons. The supply chain, the cheap labor at first, and also, you know, a lot of reasons. And of course, all these companies, probably they are still owner-owned or they are still highly entrepreneurial. So they might use AI much faster than a lot of, multi-generation big corporate, the European or American companies, the MNCs. So I think that's because of the organization structure. They worry they will lose. they will lose everything. So they embrace whatever that can increase their competitiveness. But I would argue that the MNCs still have a lot of advantage as well. If you look at, not just competing in the China market, but, you know, the MNCs already have the global infrastructure ready, right? In the digital transformation age, China is slower than the rest of the developed countries. So you have the American and European software first, and then you build a Chinese digital ecosystem. But AI, China seems to have no time difference compared with the American or European countries. So a lot of things happen in China have not yet happened in other countries. So the MNCs actually, if they are able to, bring what's the best practice in China to their other markets, European market, American market, other emerging market, that would become their competitiveness as well. So I think for AI, different from digital transformation age, for the AI, probably there would be China for global. There would be an opportunity for China for global.
Basically, there's no chart. While there was a lot of catch-up in the last 30 years in many industries, and there were maybe NMCs were surprised by how fast the catch-up happened, here there's no catch-up, it's a race. We're basically at the front of the race, and no one knows what's going. And I agree with Ling Fang. There is a lesson to take from here and bring outside. It happened already in manufacturing and in the manufacturing to cost and this kind of stuff, that some companies learned that and actually were thriving worldwide. I'm talking international companies. Well, this is one of those sectors where that will happen. And the AI, it's changing now, but the only anchor or lock that US had is the chipset, which is still a little of a handicap for China, but less than before. And then you can see that the way that some of the development, some of the element in the stack in China are not there yet, but they are aiming at changing that element, that bottleneck, and make it actually some kind of a strength to be able, for instance, to run models on IoTs. At the edge or even further. So this kind of thing, a lot of development there, whether it will succeed or not, that's another question. But that I don't see the same effort in the US. At least it's not as visible. And And like in life science, which is also an area where no one is really leading, well, AI is a place where the real contest is happening. So for NMC, I have to change their mind and say, okay, we have to pick the brains here and convince those Americans and Europeans who think they are the center of the world that they are no longer in that sector. It's at a par. But no one has won. No? The game can change, and the DeepSeek earlier this year showed that the game is not settled. Someone else can come with something else. It can come from Abu Dhabi. I don't know. Something could come and change again the game. So we are still in that very, very fluid phase in the development.
You both say something that resonates with a previous guest in an episode of ChinaBiz, Jörg Wuttke, the former president of the EU Chamber of Commerce in China. He was my guest, and I recommend everybody to listen to that episode. It's excellent, in my opinion. He's a clever man, or knowledgeable man. But he said MNCs need to use China as their fitness center. Because if you want to compete, not just in China, but globally, you must be here to innovate and both to understand Chinese innovation, but also to innovate yourself. I repeat, for 7 out of 100 of the top universities for engineering are Chinese. So if you want to be globally innovative and globally competitive, this is the place to be. And I think you both touch on that insight. I would like to ask you, I'm sorry if I keep throwing controversial things at you, but I ask you to rate a little bit simplified the adaptation of AI in Chinese companies. But if you look at through your lenses and what you're doing in your professional life, if you look at the multinational companies operating in China, do you think that they are focusing enough on implementing AI in their China business? And are they knowledgeable enough about what's going on in developing of AI and open source AI, as you talk about, Ling? Are they aware of this and interested enough? Are they investing in this in China?
About at least more than half of my clients are multinationals. In different industries, FMCG, you know, retail, you know, different industries. I always say that whatever industries that are facing severe competition, they will come to us for AI solutions. So half of the our clients are global, and I would say they're very open to all the AI possibilities. Especially the ones who are running the business, the front end, I would say they are really open. They want faster, they want cheaper, and all these sort of competitive advantage can only be achieved through upgrading technologies. But at the same time, you will also see that all these sort of AI projects will have to go through a compliance check. And the compliance check normally are controlled by the headquarters. So we need to explain, spending a lot of energy to explain the tech stack and the reason. I'm not saying that... we should not explain or get approval. But the problem is a lot of AI solutions are very difficult to explain. For instance, we use agent to plan the task. If you give the AI a task, it plans itself. And if you ask me, what's the rationale or what's how AI planned this, I'm unable to explain that, because this is a model and the A model works like this, and we find A models better than B. And that sounds like not so scientific, but that's exactly, you sort of, if you're using real AI, you give some of the decisions to AI, and it's hard to explain, just like if you ask the quant traders, right, why this algorithm works, he doesn't know. He know if you run the algorithm, it works, right? It's hard to explain. So I think that part, especially when the headquarter controlling some of the technology applications in China, there needs to be a way that to build the explanation. But that's the difficult part I'm facing.
What's your take on this, Etienne?
overall in the AI sector, we all say AI, basically it's not one thing, it's a set of technologies, it's something we don't really understand. And people in position of making decisions don't have the mental models required to make educated decisions. So either they're fit in someone else in the organization and they believe it and they put money there, or they are more cautious, they worry, and then they wait and they're wasting time. So one of the key elements, and that's not only in China, but it's probably even stronger for Chinese teams from multinational companies, but their headquarters, they have people feel the same. A lot of people are, especially if we talk about, you know, the place I know, which is B2B, industrial, manufacturing, some services, people are cautious. They don't want trouble. They are really worried about their name, their brand, so they're very cautious. And that blocks everything. While in this field, to be successful, you need to experiment, continuously experiment, try things, fail fast, learn, go again, and do something. But you need to do that in a way that does not jeopardize your company or your business. So like the algo traders, they don't know exactly why their model is positive, but they also have tests and things that make sure that when it deviates from the mode they feel comfortable, it stops. So they have the protection mechanism also. Companies don't have that yet. So and that requires a whole mindset. One thing, the only thing we really know about AI is that it always gets sometimes a wrong answer. That's guaranteed. It's impossible to have something that gives you the right answer all the time. Like humans give wrong answer too. So that's the kind of thing we need to take in the mind. And managers and executives, they don't have this mental model. That's why if I may plug it, we're actually organizing a course called AI Master Course for Business Managers in China, because in China it's even compounded by the fact that the technology is decoupled, you have a different environment, and then it's one more reason for headquarters to stop initiatives from China. While it should be the opposite, it should create an organization and the infrastructure, the right, we can call it like a sandbox or playground place where people can experiment, even if they are not from IT, if they don't know how to code, now they can do things. But in a space where they cannot do damage, but they can validate a use case. And when this is done, then another process to make it and scale it up. So if you can build these kind of things, you understand what it means, then you become unbeatable.
This is almost a dilemma. And we, you know, there's the dilemma between moving at speed and being compliant. And this is not me trying to be controversial again, but we all know that there are some MNCs who are skeptical towards Western Chinese technology, at least outside China. So you see this compliance issue, and you mentioned it, Ling, now, how everything has to be checked and double-checked. And I understand why that's important for global companies, but isn't that also a double-edged sword because it slows you down, right? Can MNCs develop quickly enough? Do they have to accept that the world develops at a pace where we have to let go on rigid compliance?
Well, Jacob, I think there is kind of skeptical about the headquarters sort of worry about the Chinese technology. I mean, this is quite reasonable in a way. And this explains why the Chinese foundation model chose to go open source. Because with open source means that you can install in your own server and you basically disconnect with the cloud environment that in China. It works independently in a way. And add one more aspect, right? I think the AI transformation, well, if you look at in the past 10 years, the digital transformation for different companies, you always have a digital transformation plan or consulting first. You have a master plan, right? A blueprint. But I think for AI, because AI implementations can be quite small, and you can see the result pretty quick. Write a code within a day, you got a program, something like that. So I think on one hand, you need to have a blueprint, but you could also allow, you know, this blueprint is not the final one, right? You don't have to have a final blueprint in order to start. You can start. It's like playing a game. you start by uncovering a lot of maps, right? So try and error, right? So I think for MNCs, for big companies, compliance is definitely important. But you sometimes can start with some small things, and then before you go big, you control a lot. But when the small things can start, at that part, you sort of build special zones, right? I remember there's a report a few weeks ago by MIT team saying that 95% of the AI transformation project failed. And the successful ones always have one small element called shadow AI, which means that in a company, you always give some space. People can test AI products without going, too difficult into the approval process. And that small part, if valuable, maybe 95% fail, but that 5% success, you then go through the whole tedious, compliance process. So I think that's the difference between AI and digital transformation.
And in terms of compliance, you have the formal compliance with regulations, and they are evolving, but it's getting a little clearer and clearer. And then you have the non-regulatory things, mistakes that have a big impact on your bottom line or on your reputation. And that's also, it's even probably even more important. We don't know where those risks can come. We know they can happen. If it happens, it's big, but we don't know what it is. That means you need to build that together with the application. When people send satellites or in space, well, they build at the same time, they build the satellite and all the checks and balance that make that the things go, and they make mistakes, they correct, and they go further. So I think that's important. And when we talk about governance, it's a nice management work. The question is, what does that mean? How do we implement it? Who does it? You need to build that at the same time as the application. And if it's a small application and people developing it are kind of made conscious or at least aware of this, and one person of goodwill try to figure out what it is, then you can build that knowledge, you can build trust between those two elements. And of course, that's the best of the possible worlds. But if you achieve that, and you have to learn how to achieve that, and that's the role of an executive, is to shape the organization to make the future possible. Well, that's what they need to do, but today they don't understand what they have to do. So it's quite a bit of work to happen there.
From your different perspectives, if you were sitting next to an MNC CEO right now discussing AI, is there one or two or three piece of advice that related to AI that you would like to share?
The first one would be, use it yourself every day. Do something useful for you as part of your job, not private life, as part of your job every day. Because if you don't, how can you expect other people to do it? And then you will learn something. You will see what he can do, what he cannot do, to a point. That's the first thing. The second thing I alluded a little before is, it's your job to create that environment where your organization can strive. And that requires this philosophy of test, fail, improve in a safe environment. So it's hard to make, but that's the target. That's the vision. And then be alert, because no one knows exactly where that is going. Some people will come up. You'll have surprises, and you will have to yourself to fail and adapt and quickly and improve. Last one, make sure that everyone in the organization gets some kind of training, workshop, sharing of ideas, how people use those tools, because today it's really underutilized. And then also they will also share the complication, the risks, and then a lot of sharing and a lot of knowledge transfer from outside and from inside the company.
For me, I think I definitely agree with the Yichen's first opinion that the CEO should use AI themselves. And second, whatever problem the CEO facing, ask AI first before ask the assistant. and I think that always keep in mind two parts. One is wherever facing growth question, I think everyone facing growth problem, think about AI as your growth partner. And with AI, I do believe that there will be a new path of finding a new path for growth. Just like 1,000 videos every day, that's a new path for growth. Without AI, you can't do it. And the second is that for the most fundamentals, what's your competitive advantage as a company? And see if AI can help you strengthen that, or AI will help other companies to threat that. And that's a strategic, that's really a strategic question that a CEO needs to ask almost every day.
None of you say invest. Not being professional AI expert like you guys, but my perception is it's going to be very expensive. And it's only for the absolute largest global MNCs, but there are also a lot of medium-sized MNCs. So the last question to you, is it expensive? Will it be super expensive for MNCs in China to implement and embrace AI?
It can be expensive, doesn't have to be expensive, depends at what level you use the tool. And I would say, like a little controversially and as a shortcut, it would not be more expensive to implement some level of using of AI in different teams than organizing a cost-cutting exercise in the company, where you recruit a McKinsey or something like that. And so I think we are talking about this kind of stuff. Or if a smaller company laying off a few people, you need to know how to evaluate the return on investment, and many people don't know how to do that yet.
Honestly, I don't think AI is a big investment. There are a lot of free AI tools that everyone can use already. If you want to use more advanced tools, $20 per month, right? I would say that it's very easy, very low cost to start with. But what you need to invest is in the organization, in the talent, in the retooling, re-education. I think those are not investing in like cloud computing, chips, not those kind of investment. But investing in retraining your employee, reorganize the workflow, let's say, and shift a little bit of the budget from big digital infrastructure to AI applications, right? I think these it's not more investments in technology. It's shifting the investment a little, and I don't think it's a huge investment. You are not going to build your own model. Go with the model development. And if you can't, if as a big company, if you don't have a good result right now, wait for another 3 months. Next model will give you a surprise and much lower cost. So, I think it's really a change of mindset.
I love the answers. Like all other business transformation, it's about mindset. That's where all change begin, and that's where all change in business is concluded. It's about mindset. Everything is just tools and processes. It's been a real pleasure to have you on board. We have reached the end of this episode. Etienne Chalier and Ling Fan, thank you so much for joining ChinaBiz.
Very enjoyable. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure.
With those words, this episode is a wrap. The takeaway: for multinationals in China, AI is no longer optional. It's a test of speed, creativity, and courage. Those who adapt quickly can unlock new relevance and growth. Those who hesitate risk being left behind in a market that moves faster than anywhere else on the planet. This is ChinaBiz. Thanks for listening. Subscribe, share, and stay tuned for our next deep dive into the forces reshaping business in China.